Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. For those joining us on the radio dial in Mississippi at WYED 94.1 FM. Also, those joining us on the East Coast on Atlanta's 106liveradio.com. And, of course, those joining us around the world at blogtalkradio.com. We're glad you all could be with us once again. John Perkins is making his first appearance on our program today. He's an international best-selling author who has written a new book that I think is really fascinating. It's my first book to read by John. It's called The New Confessions of an Economic Hitman. We're going to talk to John not only about his own journey in life, but what it's been like for him to share that with all of us, to be able to talk about some of the things that he's been a part of, but also, of course, how he's been able to try to not only raise awareness, but also, of course, share with us all how we can be a part of the solution of what's going on in the world today. John, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Thanks, Cyrus. It's great to be with you.
Hey, the pleasure is definitely all mine. And John, I read this book with a lot of fascination. I did not read the first book, of course, the one that was such a big bestseller that had people talking. But this book was really interesting for me, I think, especially in the times that we're in today, and looking at, of course, the role of money, but also the individuals that are, you know, in many ways, of course, behind the scenes, like yourself, I mean, who are kind of orchestrating things and being a part of things today. You know, what has it been like for you, John, to not only reflect on your journey, but also, of course, to think about what you have tried to do in the interim to be able to do, as I said, to raise awareness, but also, of course, to shed a light on what's really going on in the world when it comes to the economy?
Well, yeah, you know, Cyrus, the reason I wrote the first Confessions of the Economic Hitman was published about 12 years ago, but I was stimulated to write it by visiting Ground Zero right after 9/11 and realized that I had to expose what I knew about the system after that terribly tragic event. And I'd written the second book because in the 12 years since that book was published, so much has changed. And the system that I wrote about when I was an economic hitman, we were mainly zeroed in on what we call the developing countries. But since 9/11, really, the economic hitman system has come home to roost. It's spread its tentacles from the developing countries to the United States, Europe, and the rest of the world. And it's really created a totally failed global economic system, what I call a deaf economy, an economy that's essentially consuming itself into extinction.
Right.
And so I was very motivated to write this because I feel it's gotten so much worse. At the same time, people around the planet are waking up. And I want to encourage that. And so I wanted to write a book that not only exposed what's gone wrong since, but also that lays out a plan, a strategy for how we can turn this thing around quickly.
Right. John, I have to say, I was really struck by what seems to be, you know, your conscience on display in the book. You seem to be very reflective about not only who you were, your role, but also what you, because of you and your actions, what you had done. You talk about in the book, in the chapter, The Deceptive Resume, you talk about that you never thought of yourself as an economist per se, but you were smart enough to surround yourself with people smarter than you. It's something that we hear all the time, of course, when it comes to being an entrepreneur. But then you wrote this, and I think this was one of the things that really got me. I kept two documents and several other similar ones in the top drawer of my desk, and I returned to them frequently. Afterward, I sometimes found myself outside my office, wandering among the desk of my staff, looking at those men and women who worked for me and feeling guilty about what I had done to them and about the role we were all playing in widening the gap between rich and poor. I thought about the people who starved each day while my staff and I slept in first-class hotels, ate at the finest restaurants, and built up our financial portfolios. And then this is something that I think is really big that we don't hear enough of today, John, and I want to talk to you about it. You wrote, I thought about the fact that people I trained had now joined the ranks of EHMs. I had brought them in. I had recruited them and trained them, but it had not been the same as when I joined. The world had shifted, And what I'd later come to understand is that, you know, you're going to say we had gotten better or more pernicious. The people who worked for me were a different breed from me. There had been no NSA polygraphs or Claudins in their lives. No one had spelled it out for them what they were expected to do to carry on the mission of global empire. What was it like for you to be that reflective and to look back at your life and to realize what you had done even as others looked at you as a success?
Well, it generated a number of feelings, of course. One of them, obviously, was guilt. You know, I felt very badly for the things I had done. On the other hand, I also felt relieved to be exposing it. And it was a cathartic process to write the book, to expose what I had done, to admit to it. And incidentally, a number of those people that did work for me in those days have gotten back to me and thanked me for writing the book. And so they now understand a lot more about what was going on in the system. You know, I think my daughter, Jessica, who is now in her early 30s, expressed it really well at one point when she was interviewed by someone from a national magazine who asked her how she felt about the awful things her dad had done as an economic hitman. And her response was, "I know my dad has to deal with that, and sometimes it's tough for him, but," she said, I'm really glad he did it. Because now he can write about the system from the inside. He has a lot of credibility, and he's determined to change it, and he's in a position to do that. And I think I feel, you know, that, I mean, that really struck me, what she said. It really struck a chord in my heart, and I'm glad to hear her say that, and I guess I have to agree with it. Ultimately, you know, it doesn't do us a lot of good to regret what we've done in the past, the mistakes we've made. What does us good is to try to rectify them and to use what we've learned in the past to do something better now and in the future.
Exactly. And you've done that in different ways. One of them, of course, is your work with nonprofits. You address that in the book. But also, I think, you know, I try to be quite optimistic about life, John. I am an individual who, you know, has looked at the opportunities that I have been afforded in my life and think, I tell people all the time, I'm just a country boy from Mississippi, and I have been able to, you know, to do some great things and hopefully to be able to help people along the way. You call yourself in the book a professional soldier, and you talk about, you know, in the chapter The United States Invades Panama, you know, about, of course, you know, some of the things that are still existing today. Do you think that is part of the knowledge you're trying to share, is that there are a lot of horrible things that are going on today under names that are very sanitized, have been whitewashed, and, you know, are going on right underneath our nose, and because of sometimes they don't affect us directly or because we may benefit from them, we seem to, you know, to turn a blind eye to them?
Absolutely, Cyrus. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, it's as we look at these terrible tragedies that we're experiencing today in the world, the Brussels people just recently experienced, and we look at the reaction of so many of our leaders who were pressing for more war, for more violence, for more retribution. And yet, if we look over the years since 9/11, we've increased violence around the world. We've increased our military. We've increased police surveillance here in the United States. The whole Jackal and EH and economic hitman operation has expanded and spread tremendously through the United States and Europe, and things have gotten worse. It has not stopped Brussels. It didn't stop what happened in France a few months ago. We don't feel safer. We don't feel more secure. We don't feel less threatened. We feel more threatened. We feel less secure. And so we really have to ask ourselves, what is it that we need to do to make a better world for everyone? And that's one of the questions I address in the book. The fact of the matter is we've created what I call a death economy that's based on fear, debt, militarization, and destroying the resources that support that economy. And we must turn this around into an economy, a life economy that's based on cleaning up pollution and regenerating devastated environments and alleviating the causes of violence and desperation and terrorism around the world. This is a rare and wonderful opportunity that we have before us.
Right. I think that's it, and it really is up to us to be able to take full advantage of it. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio dial or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. John Perkins is our guest for this segment. We're talking with him not only about his new book, The New Confessions of an Economic Hitman, but also, of course, what it was like for him to reflect on his own life, his work, and then, of course, what he's been able to do in the interim to be able to help people, being able to do it, of course, through a book that became a New York Times bestseller initially, but now, of course, to be able to add new information that all of us can benefit from, including the chapter What You Can Do. It's chapter 46. We're going to be talking about that here in a moment. So let's talk about the response. You mentioned your daughter, John, but what has it been like for you to hear from others, not only about their understanding of what you were doing, but also, of course, understanding what it meant for others and what you were trying to do now by discussing it?
Well, the overwhelming response, Cyrus, has been very positive. I've been invited to speak just about everywhere. It's been amazing. In the last 12 years, I've spoken in Asia, China, former Soviet countries, on Russian TV, the Middle East, Latin America, all over the United States. I've spoken at Harvard and Oxford it's been amazing. And at big conferences of CEOs from corporations, too. And so what I've discovered is that people all over the world understand that the system that's been created is a failure. There's so many statistics, but just one of them, which I think is an important one, is that less than 5% of us live in the United States, and we consume almost 30% of the world's resources, while half the world is on the verge of starvation, or actually starving. Now, that isn't a model. It can't be repeated. 19% of the world's population living in China cannot do that. The numbers don't work out. Brazil can't, India can't, Russia can't, and so on. So what we know is that we've created a system that's a failure. We've created a system that is consuming itself into extinction, and we must turn it around. So I think what I've discovered is that everywhere I go, this coming weekend I'm speaking at kind of a rock concert in L.A., and I just came from speaking at the World Affairs Club in Washington, D.C., two kind of opposite ends of the pole in the United States. And in both of these cases, I find that people really understand that this isn't working, we have to change it, and they keep asking, what is it we can do to change it? And that's really why I wrote the book. But the good news is that people are understanding that we cannot continue like this, that we live on a very fragile space station without any shuttles, and we're navigating it toward disaster. We have to change the course.
Yeah. I think that is really a big thing. And one thing that was not around a decade ago, John, of course, is social media. And that has been one of the ways that people have been definitely talking about the book. You've been a part of that new frontier through social media, being able to share that way. I mean, have you found that to be, also a benefit in helping you getting the word out? You're able to use hashtags like hashtag new economic hitman to be able to help spread the word. And then, of course, seeing people already discussing it there too.
Well, yes, and one of the strategies I describe in the book is that I point out that basically corporations run this new global empire. It isn't government. This isn't an American empire. The American military, the Pentagon, the CIA support it, but it's really a corporate empire. And it's not run by a handful of doctor knows. This is not a conspiracy theory that somebody's up there pulling all the strings. It's really run by a perceived reality, a concept that the only responsibility of business is to maximize profit. And that's a pretty new and radical concept that really was espoused and became popular in 1976 after Milton Friedman won the Nobel Prize in Economics by stating that concept. So what we understand is that we must change this, and that what it's going to take is a change in mindset. It's going to take a change in letting corporations know that their real responsibility is to serve a public interest, to make a better world. It's not just to make a few rich people even richer. And I think people around the world are really getting this, and including corporate executives.
Right. One of the quotes that I made a note of, where you were actually quoted at a speech that you were giving back in June of last year, John, that was tweeted actually, is that We have a death economy, an economy that kills people and our planet. I mean, that became a tweetable moment for people last year. I mean, I think the interesting thing is, and then there were other quotes, of course, where people are, I saw one where an individual in Los Angeles tweeted back in February, you know you've been exploited and discarded, but how? And then they wrote, John Perkins explains it all for you in The New Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Is that encouraging for you, that people are using this platform that sometimes is not always used the best, but that they're using it to be able to spread information, but also to help spread the word about the message that you're sharing through the book and in your speeches?
It's very encouraging, Cyrus, and it, you know, getting back to this idea that we must change corporations, the social media gives us such a tremendous opportunity to do that. I've heard corporate executive after corporate executive tell me, you know, I want to do the right thing. I want my company to be more environmentally and socially responsible, but I'm afraid if I do it, I'll lose half a percentage of market share. And if that happens, my biggest stockholders will get me fired, and I'll be replaced by someone who only cares about market share. So they say, what I want is for our customers to overload us with emails saying, I love your product, Nike or Walmart or whoever it is.
Right.
I love your products, but I'm not going to buy them anymore until you pay your workers fair wage or until you clean up the pollution that you're causing or recycle things. And then they say, I can take these emails to my top stockholders and say, hey, listen, we've got to change. These are our customers. They're not going to buy from us unless we change. We need to change. So social media gives us this incredible opportunity to conduct a revolution without weapons. You know, the weapon is our words through the social media. And corporate executives are looking to hear this. They want to hear this. They want us to tell them what we want. And the fact of the matter is, we've been telling them the opposite up until recently. We've been telling them we want good tennis shoes, fairly inexpensively made, and if that means they have to be made by slaves in sweatshops in Indonesia, we'll just look the other way. We want cheap petroleum for our cars. If that means ravaging the rainforest, we'll just look the other way. So we've sent that message as consumers. Now we need to send a new message, and that is that we want a better world. We don't want this violence anymore. We don't want to be destroying the resources upon which our economy depends. We want to convert the death economy into a life economy.
You wrote this in the chapter, What You Can Do, and talking about that, you said this, John, this new dream is of an economy that cleans up polluted water, soil, and air, empowers hungry and starving people to feed themselves, develops transportation, communications, manufacturing, and energy systems that do not deplete resources, applies recycling and solar technologies, creates market, banking, and exchange systems that are community-oriented and not based on debt currencies or war. Then you finish off the paragraph by saying, in essence, it is a new dream founded on courage and love rather than fear and hatred. I thought that was interesting, especially in what we've been seeing, especially over the past few months with the conversation of what's been taking place in Flint, and then, of course, across this country when it comes to, you know, the things that are happening with people and jobs and, of course, being able to take care of themselves. You know, and that dream is one, again, as you said, it's founded on courage. So is that your big hope, that when people read this book, they won't allow fear of rocking the boat to stop them from doing what is necessary, that we will have the courage to be able to stand up, to speak up, and to make a difference instead of waiting on a difference?
Yes, they will absolutely wake up and realize that it's up to each of us to take action. And I think, Cyrus, that this election year is a great time to address this issue that, you know, our leaders really can't do it. Our politicians are pretty much controlled by big corporations. They get their finance their campaigns from big corporations, and many of them take extremely lucrative jobs if they lose the election or decide not to run as consultants, as lobbyists for big corporations. And it's interesting that we have two candidates on the extreme. On one extreme we have Sanders, and on the other extreme we have Trump. And both of them are saying that they're not taking money from corporations. The fact of the matter is, though, if either one of them gets elected, they're going to be surrounded by people who take money from big corporations, politicians, lobbyists, and so forth. So they're going to be hugely impacted by these big corporations. And it's important for us to understand that and to understand that we, however, the people, do have power over the corporations. Our legislators are not going to change laws that are detrimental to corporations as long as the corporations are basically feeding them. They're not going to bite the hand that feeds them. But we can let those corporations know that they must change or we won't buy their goods and services, we won't invest in them, we won't work for them, we won't support them through our tax dollars. And I think that's an extremely important thing for Americans to realize, especially during an election year like this one, where so much energy and time is being devoted to these candidates. And it's really a distraction. You know, so many people say, well, if only my candidate wins, everything will change. Well, that's just not true. We have to make a change. And I like to encourage people. One of the things I suggest that people do is, you know, pick the issue that appeals to you, that your candidate's speaking to, and commit to pursuing that issue regardless of who makes it to the Oval Office. If your candidate wins, make sure your candidate pursues that issue. If your candidate doesn't win, make sure whoever does win pursues that issue, or you pursue it through social media, et cetera. There's so many ways to bring about change, but we have to do it.
That's right. We have to do it. It all begins with us, and I think that is why a book like yours, again, is so important. Again, everyone, John Perkins has been our guest. Great conversation with you, John. The New Confessions of an Economic Hitman is the title of the book. It is available, of course, through our friends at Amazon.com. John, how can our audience stay connected with you to keep up what's coming up next for you?
Well, I'd love to have them go to my website, johnperkins.org. Sign up for my newsletter. You actually put your email in a little box there. The newsletter comes out once a month. I do a couple of blogs a month. I travel around a lot speaking at places. I would love to meet some of your listeners if they come to one of my events. And I'm also on Twitter and Facebook. So, yeah, I'd love it if they stay connected. Thank you for asking.
Well, thank you for the time. I really appreciate it. If the name sounds familiar, John was actually scheduled to be with us about a week or so ago. We had some technical issues. He was very gracious to be with us, though, to reschedule this conversation. I'm really glad we were able to make it happen. And, John, it goes without saying, you're welcome back here anytime. Looking forward to having you back on the show.
Thanks, Cyrus. I'm glad we were able to make up for that error before. And I also want to say I deeply appreciate your show. It's a great show, and I love what you're doing. Keep up your good work. That's what Freedom of the Press is based on, is programs like this.
Well, thank you so much for that. I really appreciate that. And we appreciate you, our audience, for joining us for another great segment of Conversations Live. If you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation with John, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media sites. So head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. You can click on the link there, listen to the show completely for free, and share it with your friends from there. We also tagged John on Twitter. You can find him there at Economic_Hitman, and then, of course, we'll be tagging him there to make it easy for you all to find him, too. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.